Joe Yulin.
Mm-hmm. This is tape 6, side 1.
He came in the fall of 1923. And
where did he come to tissue first?
He came to Benz there, and then went on to Wiseman. And they got the log to make that radio pole and fixed it all up in that house.
Who sent
the pioneers him? Did.
Oh, who sent him?
The Signal Corps. And
the Army Signal Corps.
Mm-hmm, Army Signal Corps. And they set it up. And then I don't know who he contacted first. I wasn't with him at the time.
The need for a radio was because there were airplanes coming in.
Yeah. Mm. Sending weather, I guess. Messages.
How did he get the information for the weather?
We had, we have instruments outdoors. You have to take them. It's set up. Kind of a box like. And then the temperature, too, and then the movement of the cloud.
He worked with the U.S. Weather Bureau.
Too. Yes. During the war, he had to get up at 4, start out at 4 o'clock in the morning, and then work every hour during the day, right up to 5. So he had to be there quite at the office almost all day.
7 days a week?
Yeah, 7 days a week, in the whole year round.
No vacation?
Never had vacation.
Never?
No.
Did he send the information by Morse code?
Morse code. And then they got, later years, they got that phone. They talk. Mostly, if it's long ways like Barrow, he send Morse code. Or to Fairbanks. He talked to quite a few people. I mean, like Tanana. He had no friend there then, running that station. So.
Was he there when Will Rogers and Wiley Post crashed up on
yes.
the Arctic?
He got that message and sent it to him. And he said they crashed down from Barrow.
He picked up the message from Barrow?
Yeah, or Captain Morgan sent it.
Oh, and then he relayed it to?
Fairbanks.
To Fairbanks,
yeah.
Where they picked it up.
Uh-huh.
But apparently over the Brooks Range, in those days, they couldn't get communication direct from Barrow to Fairbanks.
No. It has to go through Wiseman. All of that has to go through Wiseman.
So actually you were like sitting on top of the world with all the news.
Yes.
Relayed back and
forth. Uh-huh. Yeah.
How did he get power for the...
Power for that. We had a motor and generator.
Uh-huh.
Generate, and it runs. Every so often, once or twice a week. Whenever he start to go down, then he charge them all up. And if he has a breakdown, radio breakdown, radio set, we have to take it apart. And he does the welding and I hold the wires together. Oh, it's very steady, I mean. I could see pretty good at that time, too.
Mm-hmm. What year did Joe come to Wiseman?
Huh?
What year did Joe come to Wiseman?
1923, fall of 1923.
Mm-hmm. And when, what year were you married?
1924.
Oh, what month?
February 10th.
February.
More than
who married
you? Lasted 41 years.
who married you up there?
George Huey.
George Huey. He was the commissioner.
Yeah, he was the commissioner.
Oh, were you married in the roadhouse?
No, we were married right in his office.
Is that right?
Yeah, right in his, George Huey's office. It was done secret because we're afraid of the crowd. But he gave a big dinner that night and they didn't know it. All in the village went to a roadhouse, was invited to a roadhouse, had a big dinner.
Whose roadhouse was that?
Martin Slisko.
Uh-huh.
Had a nice time. We had dinner.
And then you announced it?
It wasn't announced until the next day.
Oh. Your mother was there.
Yeah, my mother was there.
Uh-huh. And your stepfather?
Uh-huh. Billy English, my stepfather, and everybody was there. We came in there, and of course I sat alongside him to eat, and they were all talking about who's sitting alongside of him.
They didn't know you were married yet.
No. No. There isn't too many girls there, and if when they get married, they just have an awful time. They have kangaroo court and everything else to go with it.
What's that, a kangaroo court?
It's just like a real court. But you call it kangaroo court. You know, they have judges there and marshals and everything. You have to go through that. Yeah.
To get married?
After you're married. That's just a big celebration for them. We didn't get it because we were too busy, too busy with the radio. Otherwise, they would have.
What did they do at the kangaroo court? Did they ask you questions or?
Oh yeah, just like a regular court.
And it was all in fun, though.
Yeah, all in fun, but it gets very embarrassing at times, I guess, with the other girls. Did when the other girl? I know it was quite a rough time. And they're going to have a shower, and we got wind of it, and we stayed right there till they got too tired to do anything. They had to go home. We got by that one. Oh, dear. It was fun, though.
Uh-huh.
Really fun. Trying to outwit him. Well, he worked year-round, every day of the week, no vacation.
He was the whole link of Wiseman with the outside world, wasn't he?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then later he became commissioner, too, and postmaster there.
Commissioner and postmaster.
Oh, yeah. He ran the post office till he retired.
And where was the post office? In your house?
No, it's over in right front street there. That's where the old post office is right there.
Oh, how did he have time? He had to be on the radio every hour? And
run there between. No, that was before. He used to, before the war, he used to work in the morning and the evening. So give him that day there a little bit, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But during the war, it had to be every hour there.
Mm.
Every hour. During this last second war, he had to be on there every hour with the weather.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what it had to do, I mean.
But there were army planes.
Yeah, army planes flying around. We don't know what's flying.
Uh-huh.
We don't ask no question, nothing.
Uh-huh.
We don't see, hear nothing.
But they would sometimes land at Wiseman, wouldn't they?
Yeah, they gas up the Navy plane.
Uh-huh.
Gas up.
Where was the gas kept? Where was the gas kept in Wiseman?
Right there at the field.
And this was brought in by airplanes?
Different airplanes. They own gas up down there.
Wing brought it in?
I think so.
DC-3s?
I think each one Pan Am was going through there, too.
Did they bring in gas?
Yeah, they bring in gas because I remember so well. They come in with this big ship and they didn't have a funnel. And they asked me if my husband had a funnel at the station. I said, yes, he had a funnel, but very small one, big enough for our place, you know. Mm-hmm. But it was a funnel about this so big. And he said, this pilot asked me if he had chamois skin on it. I said, I don't know, that chamois skin, I said, has holes in it, you know. We can't put that in. Okay. I said, take me home, and I said, give me 20 minutes and I'll sew it up. So they took me home in the car and then got the chamois skin I sewed it up for. And they took the funnel with them. They forgot their funnel at the Fairbanks.
Mm.
Their own funnel.
Where were they flying? Between Fairbanks and Barrow?
Somewhere. We don't know. I don't know. Uh-huh. That we, during the war, we don't ask questions. Nothing. I had to just keep mum. Uh-huh. Just only when they need help, you know, we try to help them.
Uh-huh.
And they gassed up, and it was a funny looking little thing, you know. It's about this big in that big ship and poor gas.
It took quite a while to put the gas in, didn't it? It must have taken quite a while to put the gas
in. Yeah. But they got it. They got it. That's better than putting it right straight from the can.
What kind of airplane were they flying?
Oh, it was a twin motored thing. I don't know.
Uh-huh.
Good sized ship.
And then they later sent you some fruit?
Oh, that was in 40, in the 40s, they had this Pan Am ship going using our beam some way, and then used that till he got by. He was able to pick up Barrow, and they did that for the whole day. My husband didn't come home for lunch. I had to pack everything over to him. And Pan Am sent us a big box of fresh vegetables.
And they arrived?
They arrived, yeah.
Frozen.
Solid.
Oh,
wean rotted.
Came in on wean.
Yeah, frozen. It was, we could use just a few, like carrots and asparagus tips and celery. And put them in boiling water. And that way we ate a little bit. The rest of it could, like lettuce.
That must have been very frustrating to get your eggs frozen or
yeah,
other things that happened.
It just really looked nice when we opened it up, but that's frozen solid.
How cold did it actually get up there in the winter?
How cold?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it'd get around 65 at times.
65 50s,
yeah, the 50s.
Did you get ice fog then?
Not very much. Not very much, just the smoke for a little while. The wind is steadily blowing.
Uh-huh.
It's blowing all the time.
It got down to 65 was about the coldest, you
mm-hmm.
And did it hang in there in the 50s sometimes for quite a while?
Not too long.
Uh-huh.
Not too long.
How warm did it get in the summers? The hottest you ever
had? Oh, I forgot that part.
In the 80s.
It's pretty hot.
Yeah.
Up
in the 80s?
Yeah. Sure, I'm sure it's in the 80s. I get pretty warm there for 1 week.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then after that, cools off again.
Mm-hmm. Mosquitoes were bad then.
Oh, mosquitoes, and no see them as thick in there. Real thick. You've got to use gloves. You have to use mosquito netting over your hat to go out. You can't breathe for the mosquitoes. And they're real bad, small ones, too.
Mm. Well, some of the old-timers got to the point, though, where it didn't seem to bother them. They would just be covered with them. I remember Denny O'Keefe walking into a house, and the whole back of his neck was black with mosquitoes. And I thought, oh, how can he stand it? But he said they didn't bother him.
Yeah, maybe they got immune to it. No.
Did they seem to bother some people more than others?
I guess so. It bothered me terrible. I know. We went down and fished, Mrs. Jonas and I went down fishing, and we had to build a fire to burn them down a little bit. I blazed, and then we started out again, and then little ways we built another fire. Oh, it was sick that night. Ah, I never forget that. We went down, Moose put the fish.
But to get back to Joe, he never got a chance to get away from that place.
No, till he retired.
How many years did he run that?
Gee, he ran at 55. From 24 to 55, 26.
26 years of service.
Mm-hmm, from 26. 23, really, right up to 55 or 56.
And then they kind of closed down because there weren't enough people to serve up there?
Yeah.
And the radio facilities went direct from Fairbanks to Barrow now?
Yeah, they have stronger stations, stronger.
Mm-hmm.
Stronger. They were very weak. They were very weak. All in the village come to the house and to the office and listen radio and radio stations from all over London, Japan. We get it all over. Anchorage is the most at the closest at that time, and they come to listen. And the village people. Mm.
So they were really up on the news, most of the people.
Yeah. There was no radio at the Fairbanks at that time. Just Anchorage.
KFQD?
Yeah, something like that.
Uh-huh. That was the oldest one here, I believe.
Uh-huh. And anyway, everybody come every evening to listen to this music and little news they gave. News they gave out. They really love it.
Mm-hmm.
It was nice to listen to these different places. Pick it up. You can pick it up there. When the conditions are just right, you pick up all over. You just keep turning. It's wonderful.
Then later on, KFAR came into Fairbanks.
Yeah.
And then you used to listen to Thunder Celtics, didn't you? Every night? Yeah.
No, I didn't. No, I get too tired, sleepy.
Mm-hmm.
My husband did.
Uh-huh.
And then he'd tell me in the morning when we have breakfast what the news he got. And I never even stay up for that, 8 o'clock. I'm too tired.
Was that really a real service to the people in Wiseman?
Yes, real service.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. People like to send messages.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure it wasn't so high like it is nowadays, you know.
Mm. These things all had to be written as news items. Mm-hmm. So even though they were direct messages, they had to be written as news items.
Yeah.
Otherwise, they'd be in trouble with the FCC or...
Oh, yeah. I mean, They send, I guess, message to their own people, you know, mm-hmm. whenever they want
to. There were some people who just liked to hear their names on Tundra Topic.
Yeah. Tundra Topic. I don't know if we went on there or not.
But whenever there was
I know, I remember when I was going home and I went into Morris Smith, and he said he could throw, Joe Yulin can throw his can opener away, the rifle's coming home tomorrow. Which was the truth, I think. He didn't know too much about cooking. Had nothing, he didn't have too much time.
Whenever there was an emergency, though, Joe would get right on with the radio.
Yeah.
Yeah,
oh yeah, if it's an emergency, get right in, get a plane in or something, work with the people.
But there was a period in the spring when no planes could come in.
For a whole month of, almost a whole month of May, latter part of April and May, and then the planes, when the field dries out, then they start coming.
But you just hoped at that time that nothing went wrong.
Yeah. Nothing has gone wrong during that time.
Mm-hmm.
We never worry either.
Mm-hmm.
That was the funny part of it. I mean,
was there a period in the fall when you were...
Yeah, when the first snow come.
Uh-huh.
And then the kind of slacked down, you know, deep snow. Sometimes we have to go out there in the evening and trap that field. Everybody goes out on it with a pair of snowshoes.
Oh, you just pack it down?
Yeah, pack it down.
So a plane could land on?
Yeah, for the next day.
Uh-huh.
We've often done that. We have Jack Hood come out. He weighs 200 and some pounds. Good and slow, but he really packs it down. We go ahead of him, you know, and then he packs in behind us.
Mm-hmm.
And
how long would it take you to get the runway?
Not very long, because the runway is like a postage stamp.
Mm-hmm.
And real short, not very big.
Did some of the pilots have trouble getting in and out?
Sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But it got muddy, too, at times, didn't it?
Yeah, real muddy. Yeah. That's the old field. Then they build a new one down below it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's much longer, a lot of gravel on it. Filled in with gravel.
Who built that? Road Commission?
Road Commission.
Uh-huh.
Built that. And there was a sort of a lake on there, and they drained it out, filled it in. And it's still going. That runway is still going.
What year did they build
the
new one?
Oh, yeah, that'd be in the 30s. The 30s.
Didn't they station a road commission crew there every summer to work on that strip, too?
And they sent in to work on the road. Road work between Hammond and Wiseman and Nolan. Out to Nolan quick.
How far?
And then they sometimes brush it. They go off up into Big Lake, up in there.
And they would brush it out?
Yeah, brush it out. There.
How many did they have usually working for the road commission?
Quite a few. About 8 men, I think.
Mm-hmm.
It's all done by handwork, though. Okay.
And that would bring in revenue to the town, to the store? And
yeah. Quite a few be working there. They have camps about a mile and a half, almost 2 miles, up on the ridge there. And then the message come in, my husband used to walk that, deliver the message.
Mm-hmm.
That's
You got the first pickup in town.
Yeah. It was a Model T.
Uh-huh.
Montague was.
It was flown in pieces?
Yeah. No, it came up by the scout.
But what year was that?
That was in the 30s. Then we got one in 41, a Chevy pickup. That was flown in, all dismantled. And the frame had to be cut. But a guy came in and welded it up, put it together. I right out on the field.
Hmm.
Everybody was out there.
That was quite an occasion when you got
there. Yeah, it was fun when they got it all put together, and it didn't take them very long to do it. And it was a Palo, a mechanic brought it in. We bought this pickup from Palo, Frank Palo. And they drove it in, into town.
How many miles?
Then, that was just a little way. This mechanic taught my oldest girl, Mary, how to run it. Right out there on the field, he gave her a lesson. And we used to take cardboard boxes and set them up on the field so she could back into it. If she hit it, it won't hurt anything, you know, cardboard boxes.
How old was Mary then?
She was about 15.
So she was soon driving all around?
Yeah, she was soon driving. Then the three children drove it, the three kids. Florence drove it, and then Benny drove it. When the girl left, Benny drove. We had to put a pillow under him. He was so short.
How many miles of roads did you have up there by then?
We had, up to Hammond River, we had 15 miles. And then there's about 10 miles out to Nolan.
So actually, the mining companies had their cars that came in then too, didn't they, or trucks or whatever?
No, it's the Road Commission truck.
Oh.
Road Commission truck.
Mm-hmm.
Now they have them in there.
Mm-hmm.
They have them in there. They drove them in, I think, over the pipeline.
Mm-hmm.
I see fancy trucks in there. Very fancy trucks. Must get on that highway, across the river.
I bet the people were all excited, though. Some of them had never seen the Eskimo people had never seen a car, had they?
No.
Or a truck?
No. It was quite an occasion. Old timers come. Here's my thing. Oh,
I have a question.
McElroy was the teacher there. And it was, I think, 20. And then she taught for a year. I mean, for the winter there. Then she left. And then Miss Levy came in to teach. And you have to have two white children to attend to hold the school. So my little girl Florence had to go.
How many?
She's only 4 years old.
How many children did they have in the school?
They had, eight or more. But they had to hold the school with these two.
Why was that?
I don't know why.
Who, what was the school under? The BIA or the territory?
Territory.
Of Alaska.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Right.
Uh-huh.
I had to send my little daughter to school. She's only 4 years old. Help with the rest. If she gets sleepy, that the teacher holds her and let her take her nap.
Who had built the school?
It was built down in Colfort and moved up. Moved up to Wyden. Uh-huh. It was hauled up by horses. The whole thing. And then they stove and fill it up with wood and keep for a couple of hours. And then the school teacher lives in a school quarters, what we call, and she has one room and her bed and stove there and make it comfortable and warm. And we have a Christmas program and one big tree over in Pioneers Hall, number 8. And everybody take their presents over there. And the children recite poems. Like night before Christmas, my daughter, she was 4 years old, and she recited the whole thing. And that she learned in school. She was only 4 years old. It was a long thing.
You dressed her all up?
Yeah, I dressed her all up, all cute. And the pilot, S.E. Robbins, and his mechanic, Tillman, afterwards grabbed her and was kissing her, and she was screaming, crying so hard. She wanted to go home right now, and I took her home.
This one teacher had, six children, or was it eight? Eight children.
I'm sure it was 8 children.
Uh-huh. Well, do you remember the names of the children?
Kitty Jonas, Lucy Jonas, and Oscar Jonas, Harry Jonas.
Four Jonases.
Jonases. And there's, I forgot. That's all I could remember.
How about Bill?
Bill was in there somewhere. Yeah, he was there. And oh dear. Harding. Cadet Rock Harding. And Charlie Horner was there.
So at different times they had
there were,
over a dozen at different times. Was there a Clara Carpenter?
Hmm?
A teacher named Clara Carpenter?
Yeah, she come in later.
Oh.
No, before that. Before that.
Bill mentioned he had her.
Yeah. She'd come from my way.
And then how about George Rayburn?
He'd come in later. He was the last second. Mrs. Long was the last one up there.
And then George Rayburn?
No, after George Rayburn is Mrs. Long.
How long did George Rayburn teach up there?
2-3 years. 2-3 years.
Mm-hmm. But they had as few as 6 and as many as a dozen at a time?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they run up to 12
uh-huh.
when they come in for a while and then they go out again.
Uh-huh.
Go out hunting food.
This would be mainly the Eskimo children.
Like Charlie Horner,
mm-hmm.
Cadet Rock Harding, and the Riley girl, Nellie Riley. She was in and out.
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
Did the teacher have to cope with children who didn't speak English?
Yeah, the last group that come in between Barrow and Wiseman. They hardly speak English at all. When they come in.
What did they do with them?
I guess they pick up quite well.
Mm-hmm.
They pick up quite fast.
But imagine having children who spoke English well, in all in the same class together with children who didn't speak English hardly at all, and each in a different grade.
Yeah.
Must have been quite a job.
Yeah.
And the teacher had to see that the school was heated, and her house was heated.
Yes.
And cook.
Wash clothes?
Wash clothes, teach all?
By hand. Everything is done by hand. Yeah. Everything.
Do you remember any special occasions that were really nice that you remember?
About the school?
Mm-hmm.
It was all nice to me.
Mm-hmm.
All nice.
Did any of the adults ever go to class there?
My mother did.
Uh-huh.
My mother did.
How long did she go?
She went for a winter. I remember when my little daughter was small, it snows, deep snow, and the teacher would pack her home, bring her home on her back, pack her.
That's a long day for a little girl.
Yeah, long day. She'd be half asleep when she comes in. It really did her good though. She picked up everything.
Mm-hmm.
When she started school, it wasn't hard for her then.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. When Nanak got stuck over in Siberia, boat Nanak, and my husband and Captain Morgan at Barrow, I had to work with this boat, and they work at night at 1 o'clock they talk. That's the best time they found that they can get through. During the day they can't. So the stations are weak. Mm. I had to stay up every night till 1, near 1:15. Then he had to get up and take the weather and send it, receive what messages they had. Then I go to bed. But all winter long I sat up and knit, sewed, beadwork.
Keep awake.
Yeah. So in order to get him up at that hour. Yeah. It was a long winter, really. And then Ben Allison got lost over there somewhere. And in February, my husband came in. He said they thought they found him. And I said, where about? He said, right there in the ocean. He thought there was a wing tip showing up.
Now
and he saw a shadow.
Where did he get that on the radio?
On the radio somewhere. He didn't tell me. I think from Barrow.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, he came back and he said it was, they landed there, had landed next day or two, I think they had landed. It was a part of the wing.
Mm-hmm.
So they got Siberian Eskimos to help dig that, and it was 5 feet of snow. And they had to dig about 100 feet or more out, 150 feet out. 5 feet of snow.
Mm-hmm.
Hard too. It was hard snow. And they had to do it fast because it's just spring of the year, getting spring. And one of the bodies was thrown way out 100 foot.
Mm-hmm.
That's what my husband told me.
Mm-hmm.
All this time that when they're working side by side with our people from here, they asked questions, the Eskimos asked questions about over here, the living conditions and stuff.
They were curious about the Alaskan side.
Yeah, Alaskan side.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
Interesting.
Yeah, I did enough knitting that year. I ran out of yarn. I took socks, top of the socks, and unravel them and make something. I had no yarn.
Were they able to talk by radio, telephone by then?
No, it's done all done by Morse code.
Oh boy.
It's all done by Morse code.
Mm-hmm.
So, it was, when they got through with all of that, and then the boat got underway, then we quit working at night. That was springtime now.
But you kept contact all through that winter.
Yeah, all through the winter.
Every night.
Uh-huh. Every night.
I wonder how many radio operators in Alaska were doing this.
Just Captain Morgan at the barrel, and then my husband, and then into Fairbanks.
Mm-hmm. None in Nome or Kotzebue?
I don't know. It's coming through there.
Uh-huh.
Otherwise, we'd been off. I mean, we wouldn't be working every night.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, my husband, I work too.
And then he'd relay it on to Fairbanks?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Wherever it go to. I don't know that part. I'm just staying awake, keep the house warm, and have it all ready when he wake him up and get him going.
Mm-hmm.
I had to stay awake till 1 every night, not doing nothing. Tired or not,
I don't think a lot of people ever realized.
No.
You know, how many people were actually involved in all this?
A lot of thought went into that. Every night I think about it. What happened to him? Where did
See, Tisha, here's another story I'd like you to tell about the sourdough pot that was kept going.
Oh, the sourdough pot. This young couple, they got married here in Anchorage, and they started a sourdough pot up. And they kept it all through the years, and it got real old. And
where were they living when they were old?
Huh?
Where did they live when they were old?
Anchorage.
They were here in Anchorage?
Yeah,
the whole time.
In Anchorage. And she got sick and went to the hospital and then passed away. And then he got sick later, a couple of years later, he got sick. And they tried to get him to the hospital and he wouldn't leave the house. And they finally found out why he didn't want to leave the house. His wife and his sourdough pot, he don't want to leave it. So the neighbors all got together and told him they'd take care of it, to go ahead and go to the hospital. And that same sourdough starter is still going on from that pot.
Do you know where they got their starter?
They started it up themselves.
They did. How did they start it?
You start plain water and little sugar and salt and flour, but you put little yeast in to get it started. And then as it then keep on working, works real good.
It gets better as it goes along.
Yeah. And you have to mix it. You don't have to leave it too long. I think that's my opinion.